And you're listening live at CITR Radio 101.5 FM in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And it's time now, I'm Allison, and it's time now for the self-advocate. And I am on FaceTime with Alex Christensen.
Kronstein,
my mistake. Now, I heard about you through Facebook because you made a documentary. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm autistic. I was diagnosed about 7 years ago at the age of 26 after many...
Try it again. Oops-a-daisy. Two secs, Alex. Oh, there we go. Try it again. So you were diagnosed at 26 with on the autism spectrum?
Yes. So after many years of both my parents and myself knowing that I was autistic, but when I was a kid, people didn't know enough about as much about autism as we do today. So, I'm a podcaster. I have a podcast called The NeuroDiveCast. I'm a freelance writer for the Nova Scotia Advocate, and I'm also a filmmaker. I'm currently developing a major documentary film.
Lovely. What is autism?
Well, autism, it's a developmental disability. Just a second here. Hang on. It's interesting you say that. Every time someone asks me what is autism, I always direct them to what I think is the best definition of autism, and that's it's called What is Autism? It's written by Nick Walker, another well-known autistic activist. He has a popular piece called What is Autism? It is easily the best definition of autism I've ever read. I suggest you go check it out.
Right. So what is your major documentary film all about?
Well, what it's about, it's in pre-production right now as we speak. I've been wanting to do an autism-related documentary for quite some time, but it had no focus. It didn't have any direction at all, story-wise. So eventually did come into focus. It's specifically about applied behavioral analysis, or ABA, which has long been considered the gold standard of so-called therapy for autism, but a very large number of actually autistic people, and as well as some neurotypical parents and even a few former therapists, oppose any form of ABA. So that's what it's going to be about. That's what it's about.
Right. So what is applied behavioral analysis?
What it is, it's like I said, it's long been considered the gold standard of intervention for autism. Its supporters tell us that it's meant to increase so-called positive skills and behaviors and reduce or eliminate so-called problem behaviors in autistic children. And most of the time, autistic kids are signed up for some kind of ABA or derivatives of it as soon as they're diagnosed, and their parents are very often told that the kids need this so-called therapy right away so they can have a good start in life. But like I said, there's a large number of autistic adults, neurotypical parents of autistic children, and even some former therapists who are saying no. They're saying that ABA is harmful, it's traumatizing and abusive, that it treats autism as a problem to be fixed, and that its ultimate goal is to make autistic children pass as non-autistic. And also, so that's what it's, yeah.
So I've heard only positives about ABA therapy, that it helps decrease anxiety, stuff like that.
That's kind of interesting because quite a lot of because there are a lot of people who are autistic adults who actually have PTSD from ABA they received as kids.
Really? I've heard that as well, like the really traumatizing parts of ABA therapy. And it being quite controversial because of that. What are the typical bad behaviors that you talk about that ABA is trying to fix, as you say?
Sorry, I was kind of losing your audio there for a second there.
What do they say about like the problem behaviors? Like, what problem behaviors does ABA try to fix, as they say?
Well, a lot of the things they try to extinguish are a lot of just typical, normal, non-harmful things that autistic people do, like stimming. That's one of the main goals of ABA, is to stop autistic children from stimming, but there is absolutely nothing harmful about that at all, unless it's potentially self-injurious. And even then, in order to stop an autistic person from self-injury, the ABA is not required to do that.
What is stimming?
Stimming, that's when it's like what sometimes autistic people like flap their hands rapidly. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Just a second here. Hang on. Or do other kinds of other things. It's like self-stimulatory behavior, sometimes called stereotypic behavior. Things like hand flapping, rocking, spinning, repeating words and phrases, often called echolalia. And that's what stimming is.
Right. So tell me a little bit, like you said that about your journey before diagnosis and then your journey after diagnosis on the autism spectrum.
Yeah. Well, when I was I always knew that I was autistic. I had actually read something. I had this old medical book that I read for fun when I was a kid. It's grossly out of date now, and I found there was an entry on autism, and it was and I was reading some of the information about it, and also and I also read some stuff about autism in an old 70s edition of the World Book Encyclopedia. Remember that?
Yes.
And I just looked at some of the characteristics of autism, and I'm thinking, this does sound a lot like me. But of course, I just brushed it off because at the time I thought autism was like a disease or an illness, which I know it's not. So eventually I did get diagnosed by a psychologist when I was 26. And since then, I've become heavily involved in the autistic activist community.
Right. You said that you also do a podcast and a blog? You do?
No, not blog. Freelance writing. I get paid for it.
Right. So tell me about your podcast first, and then we can talk about your freelance writing as well.
Sure. My podcast is called The NeuroDiveCast. It's hosted on my friend's Mixcloud channel. Basically what I do is I read various blog posts by some of my favorite autistic activists. And sometimes I do book reviews or film reviews. It's been going on a semi-regular basis since the summer of 2016.
Ah. What are some of your favorite books that you've reviewed on your podcast?
Well, I reviewed a book called What Every Autistic Girl Wishes Her Parents Knew, which is a really good one. And I also reviewed an excellent book called All the Weight of Our Dreams on Living Racialized Autism, which is the first and only book written by and for autistic people of color.
Ah, so very informative books.
Yes. I've also reviewed a couple of more academic-type books. I got a few more books in the queue that I have to review. And I've got a documentary film that I have to review at some. I'm going to be reviewing at some point as well.
Lovely. So Now, you also mentioned that you're a freelance writer.
Yes.
Who do you write for, mostly?
I write for a local online news site called the Nova Scotia Advocate. They cover a lot of like social justice issues that the mainstream media doesn't cover. I've written most of my writing there is related to autism. I've also written the first thing I ever wrote for them was a 6-part series on the social determinants of health.
Ah.
I also wrote a 2-part series on disability arts in Canada. I did a review of some board games, which is an interesting one. But like I said, most of my work is all related to autism.
Right. Now, you call yourself autistic. Why do you call yourself autistic instead of having autism or on the autism spectrum?
Because many autistic people prefer identity first language, because a person with autism is person first language, and a lot of autistic people don't like that, because there's nothing wrong with calling yourself autistic, because if you're autistic, you can't, the autism is not something that can be separated from the person. So a lot of people prefer identity first language and not person first language.
Right, which is different than many other people with disabilities.
Exactly. But there are also a lot of people who have epilepsy who prefer to be called epileptic, not a person with epilepsy.
Right. It's really dependent on the person.
Right.
And you're quite involved in self-advocacy and self-advocacy work. What are your thoughts on, like, Autism Canada and Autism Speaks?
Autism Speaks Canada? No
yes.
way. No way. No way. You may know there's actually a large, very large group of autistic people who despise Autism Speaks. You may not know that?
I have heard of
that. Yeah, Autism Speaks is pretty much the largest autism organization in North America. It was founded in 2005. And actually, here's a little funny story here. In 2015, by their 10th anniversary, they had some sort of I forget what the hashtag was. It was Autism Speaks at 10 or whatever it was. Encouraging people to tweet like a 10-year anniversary hashtag. But that backfired because a lot of autistic people took that and said, thanks for 10 years of promoting stigma and hatred against the autistic community and all and that kind of stuff. So that backfired pretty bad. But yeah, many actually autistic people despise Autism Speaks.
Why is that?
Well, because the founders of it were, when it was first founded, it was heavily focused on finding a cure for autism.
Okay. Oops, there we go. We're back. You said finding a cure for autism, which is not...
Yeah.
You don't see that as, like, the autism as a bad thing.
Yeah, see, when Autism Speaks first came out, it was heavily focused on finding a cure. And many autistic people oppose the idea of a cure.
Right. What's the... Like, and you don't find the autism as a bad thing. You find autism as part of you, and
exactly. But all the same, it's not. None of us pretend autism is all sunshine and rainbows, because it's not.
No,
we know. There's a lot of stuff. A lot of autistic people have a lot of challenges we have to
overcome.
Deal with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, is there other ways for people other than ABA therapy that you suggest to help with coping in life for autistic people?
There are lots of sort of called of interventions for autistic people that are so much better than that are so much more respectful than me. There's like speech language therapy can be a useful as long as it doesn't focus so heavily on the development of oral speech. And occupational therapy can be good as long as it's not rooted in behaviorism. But those are, like, we're talking mostly for autistic children. But for autistic adults, it's generally just finding autistic people who you can actually connect with, really.
Right. Now, what is speech therapy and what is occupational therapy?
Well, speech therapy is, of course, like helping people communicate. But a lot of speech therapy is focused heavily on the development of oral speech. But the thing is, that's very often it may not be the best means of communication for autistic people. Maybe they want to use like a AAC device, like an iPad app that helps them communicate, or maybe. Or sometimes they may prefer to use sign language or something like that. So that's but focusing so heavily on the development of oral speech is not necessarily a good thing.
Right. So what is occupational therapy?
Well, occupational therapy is basically sometimes if people have like motor skip, it helps them perform activities required in daily life, like for motor skills, that kind of thing. And that can be helpful in certain cases as long as it's not focused so heavily on behaviorism.
Right. So for the listeners out there, motor skills would be cooking, daily self-care, like washing yourself, stuff like that. So what made you interested in doing this documentary on ABA therapy?
As I said, I was hoping to, I wanted to make a documentary related to autism. Like there are some good documentaries on autism out there, but not many that are actually made by actually autistic people. But it eventually came into focus. What brought it into focus was, an incident that happened in August of 2017. There was it was the Cardgate scandal, as it's called. What happened was there was an ABA therapist from Hawaii who had created an ABA-themed Cards Against Humanity game. You've heard of that? It's like the game Cards Against Humanity?
Yep.
It was an ABA-themed Cards Against Humanity game, and she posted it on her website and Facebook page, and the cards contained numerous very dehumanizing references to abusive tactics which ABA therapists are still technically allowed to use.
What type of abusive tactics are you talking about?
Things like physical abuse, electric shocks. Those things, they may not be used as much with ABA therapists, but they are actually still... they are still technically allowed to be used.
Right. Now, why is it, if I know that ABA is so harmful, why is it still widely used?
Before I answer your question there are actually some people who use electric, there is actually one place that still does use electric shocks on disabled people. It's called the Judge Rotenberg Center in Massachusetts. And autistic and other disabled people have been fighting for years to get it shut down.
Right. Yeah. So it's not, it's very harmful to people.
Yes.
Why is it still used? Why is it seen as a gold standard?
It's kind of hard to explain, I guess, what you could say. The neurotypical parents, when they're non-autistic parents, when their kids are diagnosed with autism, they they often listen to the parents of profession, the parents and profession, the professionals, and they don't, they very rarely listen to what actually autistic people think, because I just can't, it's hard to explain, to be honest.
I just ask because it's a different viewpoint, and I saw it as something like they want their child to be integrated with the group instead of being labeled autistic and outside of the group.
Well, there's nothing wrong with being called autistic, like we've said.
Right. Now, what made you interested in becoming a documentarian and a freelance writer?
Well, a freelance writer, the person who runs the Nova Scotia Advocate had suggested that if I ever wanted to do some writing for them, then I could. So I took him up on the offer, and I've been doing that for the last couple of years. Now, in terms of documentary filmmaking, I actually graduated from the Radio and Television Arts program at NSCC. And
what is NSCC, may I ask?
Nova Scotia Community College.
Oh, okay.
I was hoping, I didn't know what I wanted. I initially thought I wanted to work in TV news, and eventually, I wanted to, but I thought I wanted to work in TV news at first, but then I didn't know if I wanted to, and so I just didn't know, and eventually, but towards the end of my program, I knew I wanted to do documentary filmmaking. So that's when I decided to be a documentary filmmaker.
Lovely. And are your parents supportive? Like,
your family? Yes, they're very supportive of it.
What's your family reaction to when you were first diagnosed with on the autism spectrum?
Well, they weren't surprised at all. Actually, they had to, as part of the diagnostic process, they had to interview my parents.
Right. And since the autism spectrum diagnosis, have they been supportive of you after and being quite vocal about this?
Yes.
Do you have siblings as well in your family?
No, I don't have any siblings. I'm an only child.
Oh, okay. So it's different. I've heard as well sometimes that if one sibling is on the autism spectrum, there is a chance for the other sibling as well.
Yeah. But like I said, I don't have any siblings.
So it would be interesting. Are there other supports in Nova Scotia where you're from to help you and other autistics?
Well, there's Autism Nova Scotia. That's one organization, but there aren't. But in terms of organizations, like actual organizations run by actually autistic people, there aren't a whole lot. There's some good. Like there's a newsletter called Autistics Aloud that's run by a local autistic. Autistic self-advocate in here in Nova Scotia. It's really good. It's a newsletter. It's like a newsletter. And there's also something called that. In terms of like actual organizations that are run by actually autistic people, there is there's a local chapter. There's a fairly new national organization called Autistics United Canada. It's a national organization run by autistic people. It originally started out as the Canadian chapters of the Autistic Self Advocacy Network. They had two chapters in Vancouver and Winnipeg, but a while back they were rebranded as Autistics United Canada, And so they had two chapters, one in Vancouver, one in Winnipeg, and now they have one in Nova Scotia.
Ah, lovely. I think that's how I found out about you, through a friend who is also autistic and lives in Vancouver. Her name is Margot, and she posted about your documentary on Facebook. So
Yes.
that's how I kind of knew about your documentary.
Oh, cool.
So kind of a neat connection there. Now, are you involved? You're heavily involved with Autistics United Canada. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. What we do is well, Autistics United Canada, they do let's see. So it's like we're like the so what we are, we promote we sorry. So what we do, we have we work on advocacy work, like we call for the creation of we work on like disability rights legislation in Canada. We make sure that autistic people are consulted in any decisions around autism services, about access to health care, education policies for autistic students, that kind of thing. That's just that's just a small bit of what we do. We host the disability day. We do the Disability Day of Mourning every year on March 1st, which is a very important event for the disability community. Very important. Very, very important.
What is the Disability Day of Mourning?
March 1st is when we March 1st is the day when we commemorate disabled people who were victims of filicide, that is murdered by their caregivers simply because they were disabled. It's usually a very difficult day for us. Usually it's a very difficult event, it can be meaning for all of us because you know it's individual people who've died, that kind of thing.
So,
I've been doing it for the last three. I've been doing it for the last 3 years. Sorry, I'm getting up. Sorry, I got a bad connection there. So I've been doing it for the last 3 years, but this is the first year I did it as part of Autistics United in Nova Scotia.
what do you guys do in Nova Scotia for the Disability Day of Mourning?
We basically do with the same thing that everyone does when we hold the event. We hold the event. Generally, I reserve space for it. We invite some people there. I do some readings. We have a minute of silence, a reading of the names. We hold our candles. We hold LED candles because we can't use a flame-based candle indoors. And
Have you gotten a good response? Have you gotten response for the Disability Day of Mourning?
Yes, I have gotten a good response.
Tell me about your response.
Well, we don't get a lot of media attention, but everyone agrees that it's a good event. It's an important event for us.
Have you been able to see what other provinces do for autistic people?
Yes, Ontario, there's a big self there's a fairly there's a self-advocacy organization in Ontario called A4A Ontario. It's a very important one. This is a fairly big one. They're making huge waves right now. I mean, very big, very big. In Vancouver, that's where like the main Autistics United Canada chapter is. They've got a pretty good community out there too.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing as well. And I previously talked to interviewed another person in Toronto, which I will hopefully air at a later date, with the autism virtual reality experience. And which is a mobile virtual reality experience that simulates for neurotypical people on what it's like to be on the autism spectrum. Is there anything like that in Nova Scotia?
No, there isn't. No.
Or is like. Now, you said that there's an Autism Speaks in Nova Scotia?
No, I didn't say that.
Oh,
no.
My mistake. Yeah. But what type of other organizations are there for autistics in Nova Scotia?
Well, like I said, there's the main one is Autism Nova Scotia.
Right, right.
Autism Nova Scotia, that's the main autism organization, but it's not run by actually autistic people. Most of the people who are in charge are neurotypical, and they used to have something called the Autistic Self-Advocacy Council of Nova Scotia, but it had become dormant over the last couple of years, and it kind of doesn't exist anymore. I had been to a couple of meetings, and it was pretty good. What happened, though, was the person who was in charge of it, he moved to another part of the province and wasn't able to keep going with it. So I thought, well, something has to take its place. That's why I offered to launch a chapter of Autistics United Canada, and well, here we are.
It's great. And have you been able to connect to other autistics outside of Nova Scotia?
Yes, absolutely.
Can you tell me about that and your experiences with that?
Well, as part of my work with Autistics United Nova Scotia, I do have regular online meetings, either through Slack or some other way, with the membership in Vancouver and Winnipeg, and sometimes with the network of other people, like in Ontario. And I also connect with a lot of other autistic people in Canada, in the United States, and in Britain and Australia, too.
That's amazing to be out in Australia and Great Britain and the United States. Now, what is your response like? What is your feedback from those other countries and their treatment?
A lot of these autistic people, we know each other because we socialize online all the time.
Right, which creates more of a community, I take it.
Yeah.
And do you compare notes or do you help each other through the online community?
Yes, we do that all the time.
What type of support do you get from talking online with other autistics?
Well, all kinds of support, really. We just helps us understand each other, really.
Does it help becoming normal almost, because you get to see how or other coping skills that others have integrated in their lives?
I think so. I don't really like to use the word normal, though.
Right. Coping skills for neurotypical people. What type of coping skills do you get for with other people?
Well, we just talk. We just basically just chat online about what's going on in our lives, that kind of stuff. If something's really going on, I help us chat, and that's basically what works for me. Basically, just talking with my fellow autistics and some neurotypical parents too.
Now, you said that the neurotypical parents and some former therapists don't find the ABA therapy quite harmful. Can you tell me more, and the listeners, more about that and why they say that ABA is harmful?
Well, the neurotypical parents, they listen to what actually autistic people think, and they say, no, we're not going to put our kids in this.
Right.
And they do. And then they also what else? They and some of the former therapists, they realize eventually what they were a part of was awful. So they've so they leave the ABA field.
Right. So now you write freelance, right, for the Self-Advocate in the Nova Scotia.
It's called the Nova Scotia Advocate, is the name
the
of the site.
The Nova Scotia Advocate. Can you tell me and the listeners more about the Nova Scotia Advocate?
Well, I believe I mentioned that a little bit earlier there. They're an online news site that covers mostly social justice issues the mainstream media ignores.
Right. Now, like, what type of social justice issues for disabilities? Is it all disabilities?
Well, they talk about, like,
Well,
they cover all kinds of issues. They cover things like certain, like, healthcare issues, welfare, poverty, the environment, labor issues, any number of things. They also focus a lot on things like for people, disabled people, housing for people with disabilities. Deinstitutionalization is a big thing, that kind of thing.
Now, I know in BC, families do get a tax credit if the child is diagnosed on the autism spectrum, and tax and government and money to have therapy. Is that true also in Nova Scotia?
No, I don't. I'm not. I'm actually, that's not one of my areas of expertise, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
On the tax credit.
Have you gotten support, other support other than having support online from other autistics?
Like, what do you mean exactly?
Like housing, housing help, or educational help, stuff like that.
I still live at home right now. Education help. I didn't need a whole lot of help when I was going through school, to be honest.
Right. Now, what do you feel about that new federal law that just passed for people with disabilities?
The Accessibility Act?
The Accessibility Act.
Well, I'd have to take a closer look at it. I haven't really gotten a chance to look at it just yet.
Right, right. Now, do you do, other than your freelance work and the documentary film that you're producing and the podcast, do you do other stuff as well?
Yes, I also work for a local TV production house as well.
Ah, which TV production house?
It's called Clarice Entertainment.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, I work there as a contractor. They do a lot of stuff for Eastlink TV, a local community cable station. They do like one-off documentaries and some TV series. I work there generally as an assistant editor and I also do closed captioning as well.
Lovely. So what type of documentaries do they make?
Generally things that are heavily Nova Scotia centric. Like a Nova Scotian to them.
Okay.
Like they've done a couple of cooking shows. They've done a couple of other interesting stories, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Do they do a lot about disabilities as well?
They actually did do one film called Ability, and I'm actually in it.
Lovely. Tell me about that experience.
It was pretty fun, actually. They interviewed me. They got some shots of me, footage of me doing my podcast.
Lovely.
It was fun.
It sounds like a lot of fun. Tell me about what made you interested in the podcasts.
Well, actually, it wasn't actually my idea. A friend of mine who she's a neurotypical mother of two autistic sons. She has her own podcast channel, and she was wanting to know if I wanted to do like a neurodiversity self-advocacy podcast, and I said yes. So we recorded it at her house for a while, but one day her laptop was having like tech issues, so we couldn't do it. So there's a media studio at my local public library, so I record it with a little recording studio set up, so I record it there now.
Lovely. So it sounds like you're really into the media. Have you done a lot of radio stuff as well?
Well, I've been on a local new radio talk show a couple of times.
Very neat. Tell me about that experience as well.
That was pretty fun, actually. Really fun.
Yeah? Neat. How did you get involved with Autistics United Canada?
Well, like I think I may have mentioned this, or I may have alluded to this earlier. They, like I said, I had been following them for a while, but I approached them interested in starting a Nova Scotia chapter.
Right. So it was to help other autistics.
Right. Because we didn't have like an actual organized group run by actually autistic people.
Right.
Right. Here, because we had like Autism Nova Scotia had a small thing called the Autistic Self-Advocacy Council of Nova Scotia, but it had fallen to a state of dormancy, and it eventually, and so I thought, well, something had to come along and fill the gap that it left. So that's why I did this.
Lovely. Now, for people who are diagnosed on the autism spectrum later in life, what advice do you give to them?
Embrace your autistic identity. That's the big thing. Embrace your autistic identity. Find your community, connect with your people, and then just know that being autistic is it's a good thing. There are a lot of challenges you'll have to face. It's no one pretends it's all sunshine and rainbows, but being autistic is a good thing.
Where can you find information about for if you're diagnosed on the autism spectrum? What type of info? Where is the best for resources?
Well, there are all kinds of things, resources from actually autistic people. There are a whole bunch of like Facebook groups where you can find your community. One of my favorite ones actually is the Ed Wiley Autism Acceptance Library. It's a local it's a neurodiversity library in Washington State, and their mascot, the neurodivergent narwhals, they have all kinds of little like posters and memes, which explain all kinds of autism related things in a very, very clear, straightforward manner.
Lovely. And are they online?
Yes, they're online, of course.
Do you know their website?
The URL is neurodiversitylibrary, all one word, .org.
Lovely. Now, your documentary will be through one company. How did you find this production company?
No, actually, the documentary that I'm not doing it through Claracy. I'm doing it as my own project, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Once you produce this documentary, how can we find it?
Well, once it's done, it will probably, most likely it's going to be, online, like video on demand, and may play at a few film festivals. Whether it gets a theatrical release or a broadcaster, is really up in the air. Mostly it'll be likely like film festivals and video on demand.
Lovely. Now, before we conclude with this interview, what would you like for people listening to us, what would you like for them to know about autism?
Well, just to know that autistic people are the real experts on autism, not the neurotypical parents professionals, but autistic people are the ones who need to be front and center in all discussions on autism. They're the ones who need to be, yeah.
And one last question before we go: what is your what type of legacy would you like to leave the listeners out there?
What kind of legacy would I like to leave?
Yes.
It's kind of, no one's ever really asked me that, actually. Just knowing that, I don't know if I can answer that, to be honest, Allison.
Maybe to show that you have a value in being on the autism spectrum, and that you can see this documentary once you produce this documentary.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Yes, yes.
Thank you so much. And this was Alex Kronstein?
Kronstein.
I'm always going to mispronounce Alex Kronstein. Thank you so much, Alex. I hope the documentary goes well.
Thank you.
I'll see you soon. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye.
Goodbye.
And that was Alex Kronstein from Nova Scotia. He is an activist, an autistic activist from Nova Scotia. He is making a documentary on applied behavioral therapy, ABA, and he is also an activist, a freelance writer for the Nova Scotia Advocate, and makes podcasts about disabilities. So that is very interesting. And of course, I'm Allison. To end the show, I would like to mention about the fund drive, CITR fund drive. You can donate at citr.ca/donate. It is our Ruby Jubilee. So 80 years on air, free-forming, very different than what we're used to. So we should all donate, and so that we can have another 80 years on air. To end the show, I'm going to play Kyprios. He is a local rapper from North Vancouver. Even though he is neurotypical, this song, Better Miracle, talks about that even though we don't want to have a miracle, we want to have just better overall. So here he is. A Better Miracle from Kyprios.
Today, my window, the sun came through. Today was a day I thought I looked to my window, felt the pain that I knew. The sun heard about it when he came through. Good looking out, I needed you. Today was a day that didn't need rain. My window looked to me to make a change. The sun rising to the occasion came through. Good looking out, I needed you. Oh, oh, we're all right. Oh, oh, we're all right. Oh, oh, we're all right. Oh, oh, yeah. Yeah, I know, within myself I'm gonna be okay. Remember, back then I've come a long way. The dream may never ever be the same, it came true. Still here with you, and that'll do. I know, the road I'm on is not an easy way. Remember, that I will define the path I take. The dream, yeah, I'm a dreamer, what can I say? Came true, still here with you, and that'll do. Oh. It's in my fingers, I know. It's in my soul now. I don't need a miracle. Just want to get a little better. It's in my fingers, it's in my soul now. I don't need a miracle. Get a little better. I'm not asking for a miracle. Just want to get a little bit better. I'm not asking for a miracle. Just want to get a little bit better. So full of regret for last time, memories seem to forget, never remind the hope. The hope ain't enough, but it's alive and love. Your love is the one to get me by my life. It's never too late to get it right. Memories slip in my mind throughout the night. The hope helps me cope with my life and love. Your love is the one to get me by. Oh, 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 we're all right. Oh, 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 we're all right. Oh, oh, we're all right. Oh, oh, yeah. Today is here for me to redefine yesterday. Stay in the past, I let it die in time. I be doing fine getting by, cause now it's the only moment mattering in life. Today, live for today, only today. Yesterday, never the same. Sever the pain in time. Love and learn and burn until the night, cause now it's the only moment mattering in life. I feel it's in my fingers, it's in my soul now. I don't need a miracle to get a little better. It's in my fingers, it's in my soul now. I don't need a miracle to get a little better. I'm not asking for a miracle, just won't get a little bit better. I'm not asking for a miracle, just won't get a little bit better.
The Vancouver International Women in Film Festival is back for its 14th celebration of cinema created by women from around the world. Running from March 5th to 10th at Viv Van City Theatres, the festival offers a variety of programming for filmmakers and the community alike. Go for the film screenings and stay for the parties, panels, discussions, workshops, artist talks, and more. Tickets are on sale now. Visit womeninfilm.ca for full details.